The following program is intended for mature audiences.
The following program is brought to you with limited commercial interruption.
Today's broadcast is being simulcast in broken English.
Here we go in 3, 2...
Time to wake up!
Hey, what are you doing here? About to go on the air!
Uh-oh.
Get out of bed. Resistance is futile.
Back to reality.
I love that show.
It's very hip to be on the show.
We ain't one at a time in here. They broadcast me out on the radio. We're mass communicating.
Best show since no other show.
I absolutely love you. You're thoroughly entertaining.
Get ready to taste some sweet ear candy.
Okay, here we go.
It's showtime.
Gentlemen.
This is The Cue.
Let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Cue. My name, of course, is Mark Bland, and you are listening to the best moderate liberal talk show east and west of the Mississippi River, coming to you live on 1280 AM KYRO and 1420 WINI worldwide on the internet at thecuenow.com. And we have a huge show for you today. We are going to be hopefully joined by Lou Ferrante, the former member of the famed Gambino crime family and now host of Discovery Channel's Inside the Gangster's Code. There is a young kid being denied medicine that could save his life, and the medical company is blaming Obamacare. We are going to discuss that, but we are going to be joined by none other. And I mean, when I say this, ladies and gentlemen, I do not take this lightly. This man has been by my side since 2008, doing radio shows with me. He is one of the popular and most entertaining guests that we have here. Every single time he steps into a studio with us, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, once again, Matthew Krueger.
Yeah!
Woo!
All right.
I think that is the best intro I have ever received in my entire life.
The best intro in your entire life?
Entire life.
That's a lot of life, dude.
Yeah, man.
Your whole life.
It's 31 years.
In 31 years, you've never had a better intro than that.
Yeah.
Well, you can't top the best anyway.
No, man. Mark Bland is the best. He is the best in the world at what he does.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Cue. As I said, we do have an action-packed show today. So let me get into this a little bit here, because I got into some skirmishes on the Facebooks and the social medias this week, guys. I don't know if...
Damn internets is rough.
I don't know if you guys believe that or not.
I don't. But, I can't believe you would have that.
I definitely did.
I've never seen it happen in my life.
I have gotten into a few typing. I don't say verbal because it's not verbal. Like, typity-type-typity skirmishes?
Communication skirmishes?
Communication skirmishes happened this week with a few different people. And it actually brought up one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I wasn't happy about the way that one ended. It wasn't not the way that it ended, per se, more of like what we were talking about and the argument. And I'm going to get into one of my rants, okay, if that's okay with you, Producer Bobby.
Absolutely.
Rant on, ranter.
Okay. So if you haven't noticed lately, gas prices are way up.
Right.
In comparison to where they've been over the last 6 to 8 months, solid.
Correct.
30 cents, right? 30, yeah, 40 cents.
They jumped up to like 350, somewhere around 350. They're dropping down now slowly, but of course they're going to probably maintain.
It's been hovering at like 315,
right? Yeah, for a long while it's been at between 3 and 310, somewhere in that range, and then all of a sudden over the last week and a half to 2 weeks, it's like 350, and then somewhere around that range between 335 and 350.
Are we blaming it on Russia and the Ukraine and the pipeline that has nothing to do with us?
We could be blaming it on that. That's possible.
Well,
that's,
now that you brought it up, yes.
Yeah. Well, now that you brought it up, Matt, yes, that's where we're going. No, actually, what I want to talk about is the fact that why gas prices have jumped up. Because people are trying to blame Barack Obama for this. I feel like I'm not defending Barack. I haven't heard a ton of people saying Barack Obama. I've heard more people saying what you said, Matt, the Russia, the Ukraine, the pipeline, and this, that, and the other. I know for a fact it's a completely different thing. That has
for
nothing.
For a fact.
I would say, yeah.
Talking in extremes here.
We are talking in extremes. I'm going to say for a fact that the gas prices have jumped up because of conservative primaries that are getting ready to come up. And you do have people that need to start getting ready to get booked into their spots for the big elections and the ability to campaign over the summer.
But doesn't that crap always happen at the election time? Like, people were complaining right before Obama got reelected. They're like, oh, well, gas prices are $3.15, $3.25. And then all of a sudden, right at the election time, gas prices were like $2.20.
My favorite is always when the conservatives out there like to bring up the fact that when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States the first time around, gas prices were like $1.85 a gallon. And look at where they're at now. It's obvious. And I'm like, no,
but
no,
the
no.
whole thing about that was Bush. I mean, I was in Georgia when this a whole spike happened, when it went up to like $4.50.
Oh, yeah. Everybody continues to forget.
Now he brought it back down, but honestly, how much control does a president have over
Zero.
That? Now with Bush, you might be able to argue he's got more control than other presidents just because of his hands in the pockets of the oil industries, being a Texas boy, being an investor. You could argue that.
The point is that a lot of people keep forgetting that 2008 was a horrible year for us economically as a nation.
Oh, we tanked. Right.
We first off, we had gas prices at $4.50 a gallon in the middle of the summer. It was the highest it had ever been in the history of the United States.
Five, I think, in for other a places, little bit.
In other places. I have to always do based off of what I saw in the
See,
Midwest.
And at the time, I was in Georgia. So, like, I'm not basing Missouri prices because I don't know what they were.
Yeah, at that time, they got up to about 408 to 410. Somewhere in that range is where they kind of topped out here in the St. Louis area. Right. Now, $4 is the highest price we had ever seen in the St. Louis area and in the Midwest. Obviously, it got up to 5 and maybe a little over 5 in other places, which is the highest they have ever seen.
And in, like, New York, I'm sure it was, like, 7.
Possibly. You know, very possibly.
The crazy expensive places.
Now, all of a sudden, then the economy crashes.
Right.
It comes crashing down because of subprime mortgages and the people can't pay their bills. And literally, that's in September. That's the beginning of September when that happens. Or... yeah, it was either the last week of August or the first week of September. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was right there. It's those 2 weeks I'm talking about is when that happened. And so what happens after that is that all of a sudden, all the investment bankers, all the big dogs, all the conservative-based money backers that run these big organizations and companies and stuff that are failing left and right and they need to be bailed out like Goldman Sachs and stuff like that, they turn around and they're telling all of their power players, yo, we got to get this under control because, like, we're already failing, but if that guy crashes and that guy crashes and that guy crashes and then these things happen over here, we're going to all come crashing down together. So, of course, they put their phone calls in. You know, Bush does have friends and stuff like that. Not saying it was Bush. At that time, I think it was more OPEC's fault than it was Bush by any means whatsoever. But they put their phone calls in, and then all of a sudden, as the election starts to come closer and closer, and this Barack Obama guy starts to get more and more and more popular leading up to November 6th or 5th that year, boom, gas prices drop within a month and a half to 2 months total from $4 a gallon straight down to like $2.10 at election time. And then over the next month into Christmas and into the beginning of the new year, at the inauguration, I remember I have a receipt for it. Gas was $1.35 a gallon that I bought it for the week of or the week after the inauguration of Barack Obama. Now, that has nothing to do with Barack Obama. That had nothing to do with Bush. That literally is just scare, scare, scare. Oh, my God, we got to revamp. We got to revamp. We got to revamp. You know what I'm saying? We got to do whatever we can. Keep it low, keep it low, keep it low, because things are crashing and people can't afford nothing. You know, we want them to be able to afford the things that they're crashing on. And so then slowly it was going to go back up. Now, yes, we have had sustained prices of $2.75 plus since Barack Obama has been president of the United States. We were already hitting $2.50 a gallon on average before we started having the summers of $3, $3.50, $4 during Bush. So we were already there. Like, this isn't, that wasn't something new for us as a country. We were already at $2+ per gallon, and we were getting inches here and there. So I want everybody to understand something. There is a method to the madness when it comes to pricing of things in the United States of America. I'm not blaming conservatives and saying conservatives are the only and be all end all fault of why gas prices are going up. But I want people to understand that there are power players on both sides of the fence. There's things that the liberals are involved in that the conservatives really don't have any play in,
And there's things the conservatives are involved in that the liberals don't really have any play in. And certain things like oil and gas, they kind of both have power players involved.
Right.
And then as you get closer to elections and things, you will see things drop, raise, go to wherever it needs to go, depending on who the power player that pulls the right strings, so that people can say what they want. So like, if these, let's say prices go up to $3.75 a gallon over the next month.
Right.
Okay. Which is very possible. We've seen $3.75 within the last 2 years.
We know it's possible.
We know it's possible. But if they get up to a sustained $3.75, $3.60 to $3.75, people are going to be not happy about those prices. And they're going to be like, who's the guy? Who's the president? Oh, it's Barack Obama. What is he? He's a Democrat. Well, then I don't want Democrats. It's obvious that it's their fault. They're the problem. That's why this is like this.
And that's the problem right there, because of the fact that, you know, when Bush got reelected was the whole time with the mortgages and stuff. So mortgage prices were down. Mortgage prices were doing were lower right as Bush was getting elected. So people weren't sitting there going, "Oh, who's the president? Oh, George Bush? Dude, he's dropping the mortgage. My APR is doing great." People weren't looking at it like that.
My theory on presidents and whether you like or dislike them, and I want to hear both of you guys' opinions on this. My theory on presidents and whether you like or dislike them, regardless of their political sway, okay? Uh-huh. Regardless of whether they're a liberal, a Democrat, or a Republican, it doesn't matter. Like, whoever the president, I think it literally has to do with how a person's life is literally going at the time that the president is in office, whoever it is. You're going to have people that those 8 years that Bush was in office, regardless of if we were in a war with Iraq or this, those were the best years. They started their first company. It went gangbusters. They made a ton of money. Things were going great. And boom, those 8 years were amazing for them. The same thing probably would have happened had they started it 8 years before that.
Correct.
With a different president. It's just like, so whatever you're doing or whatever your businesses or your companies or some people. But then you have people that are going to have, well, my mom and my dad passed away from cancer, or they were passed away in a plane crash or something. Like, you know, you're going to have absolutely things that happen. Like, there's nobody whose family members who were a part of the 9/11 towers collapsing is going to ever say, oh, things were great during the Bush administration.
Right.
There's never going to be one. Like, I would be hard-pressed to find one.
Right.
I'm not saying they blame Bush. I'm just saying that it's going to be hard for them to say that, oh, yeah, when Bush was president, I was a happy person. Like, they dealt with the death of a family member.
You could argue it, and I mean, you can get all conspiracy theory on the whole 9/11 thing.
Oh, of course you could.
I'm gonna, and you know, it's Bush's fault. But then again, if you just go by,
wow,
if you just go by like the facts, I mean, you can't exactly blame, you know, somebody's death of a family member specifically on a president.
Well, no, but I'm just saying during that time. No. Well, it was not Bush's fault that the plane. Listen, we have crazy people in this world. They do crazy things. That's what it really comes down.
And like I said, we could talk about the conspiracy theories that the White House was behind it.
Had they gotten away with it during President Clinton stuff with the bombing of the World Trade Center with the truck in the basement of the World Trade Center, and that it happened then instead, people would have been like, oh, that guy let it happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. The truth is that I think just depending on how your years go up and down or however they flow in general has to do with how you view the president.
Right.
Like, right now you might have a lot of people financially that are struggling and have been since Barack Obama's been president.
Correct.
But a lot of that has to do with you got hammered in the last 6 months of Bush's presidency. Not saying it was Bush's fault. I'm just saying you just got hammered then, right as the new guy was coming in. So, like, you were, like, living paycheck to paycheck, and then all of a sudden you lost your house, you lost your job, you lost this, you lost that, and then the new guy comes in, and you're just like, well, life sucks right now.
People also, you can tell when, I mean, obviously you could tell when an election is happening because it's all over the TV, but you could tell whether or not how many people actually like who is president at that time based upon the economic state within the last 6 months of their presidency. Because if people approve of the party, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, whatever, you will see a trend upward of the economics.
And perfect example of what I'm trying to say. Perfect example. I'm going to take another broadcaster who Matt loves, and I'm going to use that person as an example. There is a female
I'm going to take a broadcaster that, you know, likes to put words in Matt's mouth.
Matt has gone on record and said that he is a fan of Dana Loesch. Now, Dana Loesch literally has had the best years of her life, literally, since Barack Obama has become president. Because prior to Barack Obama becoming president, she had a small local show. Things were starting to, like, bubble a little bit, but they weren't going real well and this, that, and the other. You know, she was doing 2 hours on the weekends.
She's had a lot of fodder to argue against.
But do you see my point? Like, you could, like, go to her and go, hey, listen, please break down the best 5 years of your career, your life, over your entire existence. And she would literally have to probably point at the last 5 years and go, oh, my God, I went from where I'm at to heavily syndicated, super popular, extremely well known, this, that, and the other, and all under the guise of the guy that I literally get on the radio and say is a horrible human being every single day of the week. Literally. And you can, and both people are right. She does say those things, and that's how she pontificates. At the same time, she has had a ton of money, windfall, success in her career. Like, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Like,
yeah, but it's not because of, like, how I'm hearing your argument being stated is, and correct me if I'm wrong, sure. This is just how I'm interpreting it, is that it's Barack Obama's policies that have caused Dana Loesch to be a success in her industry.
That's not what I said at all.
I know. That's just how I'm interpreting it.
And I don't know why you would interpret it that way.
Well, how I would, I guess, rephrase it is that because of Barack Obama and his failures, is that that has given her a template to argue against, and there are so many people out there that agree with her.
Well, no, I understand
that she has become popular in spite of Barack Obama.
I don't think
Barack Obama
didn't even have to win presidency, and she still would have had the same success, I believe.
I don't know. Let's just say Mitt Romney would have won, and he, for the sake of this argument, was the perfect conservative Republican candidate, and he won. And he was everything that Dana Loesch could have hoped for.
Do you feel my career would have skyrocketed?
I don't know. Maybe. It's possible.
I mean, the next guy could be coming up here in 2016. If it becomes a Republican and I host this type of a show based off of your argument, then I'll have tons of fodder to
it's possible. If you can communicate as...
Air America and the entire network failed... And they had Bush to argue about.
But if you can argue in a way that connects with people, then yes, I agree with you. She argues in a way that connects with a lot of people.
Yeah, true. I would say that she does have a certain niche fan base. That's without regard to that, obviously, she's going to tap into a certain... But she was tapping into that before Barack Obama was even the guy that was up to become elected president. Like, before he was even the candidate for the Democratic Party, she was already tapping into that, is my point. Like, okay, she didn't even need Barack Obama.
Okay, but so answer the question. Let's just say, for the sake of the argument, Mitt Romney won, perfect, you know, conservative candidate. Would her success have seen the grounds that it has now? I mean,
rephrase that. Say that question again. Say it again. Okay. Say it again. So that everybody out there hears
it
clear.
If a Republican candidate would have won, and it was the perfect conservative candidate that Dana Loesch could have ever wanted.
Yeah. A Tea Party president. Got it.
What would have been her material? Would she have had any material?
Of course.
That's my point. It's like, hey, everything's gravy. That's a good show, guys. See you later.
Before Barack Obama becomes president of the United States, she's already tapped into that fan base and is growing it and growing it already. So, yes, that's my point. Like, to get back to the original discussion, the point is that if you ask Dana Loesch the best 5 years of your career, your life, where you've been the happiest and made the most impact in your world, it's under Barack Obama as president of the United States. She cannot argue that. I don't care what. She was not in the same position she is now that she would have been under Bush or under Clinton. She wasn't,
Mark,
because she wasn't there then.
You know me. I can argue anything. Of course I can argue against that.
Of course you could.
It's coincidence.
But my point is...
It's a coincidence that it's Barack Obama.
My thing is that, ladies and gentlemen, exactly, it's coincidence. It's always coincidence. If you have a couple people that die in your life that were really special to you under whatever president, those were rough years. If they stay alive and your life is going well, those were... It's coincidence.
And going back to that, this is something I didn't bring up, but just because you have a family member die, and I'm not saying it's not tragic, and I'm not saying it's not hard on the family, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to have a bad decade or a bad year.
Of course not.
There are other aspects of life that you can look to and enjoy, and depending on what your spiritual or religious beliefs are, you could completely think that this is the best thing that could ever happen because now they're in such a better place, you know, and they don't have to worry about all the sadness and tragedy and drama of the earth, you know?
The earth?
You could argue
the wind?
That too.
Oh.
I'm going to go all Ultimate Warrior, okay? Just settle down.
The spirits in the sky.
And the spirits in the sky.
And the Norman Greenbaums. I get it. I understand. I understand where you're going with all of this. My point was very in general, basically this, ladies and gentlemen. Gas prices are high now. It sucks. I really do believe that some of this is being fodder for the primaries that are getting ready to come up, for these guys to kind of place themselves in the positions they want to be in so they can get their guys to win so that they can campaign over the summer and into the fall, which is fine. And it's we're going to have to... Guys, general inflation of things is going to... cost money, you know what I'm saying? It's cost money, so it's one of those situations where you're just gonna have to deal with life. Okay, it's tough. I get it. At the same point, look back on your last 5 years of your life. Was it the roughest? Was it the worst 5 years of the life for Matt? It might have been. The last 5 to 7 years of his life might have been the roughest. And under Barack Obama, that doesn't make it any easier for him.
5 years ago? Yeah. 4 years ago, things started changing. And the last 4 years have been amazing. And Barack Obama has nothing to do with it.
But Barack Obama was the president. So under the president's...
I did it. Coincidence? Not Barack Obama.
So it's coincidence. That's the argument. It's coincidence.
Pure happenstance.
If anything else, it probably could have done better if his policies weren't getting in my way, right?
Oh, yeah. Bam. All the problems you're having right now. All the huge problems with your life that are going on. All the... What happened today? What did someone knock on your door and take your gun today? Did that happen?
No.
Do you got health insurance?
No. Nobody came and knocked on my door and took my gun away because I have actually lost the right...
Do you have health insurance?
...to own a firearm. Dude, so there.
Well, okay, fair enough. But that's your own problem. That's your own problem. That's not everybody else's problem.
I earned that.
Yeah, you earned the right to not be able to carry a firearm anymore. Good job, Matt. Maybe that's a, you know, that's a rough time. That's a rough time in life, you know. That happened under Bush, too. You lost your firearm under a Republican president. Yeah. That's tough. That's a tough one. You did.
Hasn't really been that
Those
tough.
Those Republicans were taking your president. They're taking your guns away. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a quick break here on The Q here on 1280 AM KYRO 1420 WIRI9 worldwide at theqnow.com. We have got a giveaway with Justin Moore coming up. Take a listen. We'll be back right after this.
St. Louis, they're bringing it in from the backwoods to blow you away.
Lord have mercy,
Justin Moore.
Up in the backwoods.
Randy Houser.
Come on now, we're running out of moonlight.
Coming to you live. Justin Moore's Off the Beaten Path Tour.
I just point at me.
March 27th, Chaffetz Arena. They're bringing the party. Justin Moore and Randy Houser.
Johnny Cash and John D.
Plus, Josh Thompson.
Way out here.
March 27th, 7 p.m. at Chaffetz Arena.
USA.
Tickets are on sale now at Chaffetz Arena Box Office. Call 800-745-3000 and online at Ticketmaster.com.
Country music, we can't even beat her.
Justin Moore, Randy Houser, and Josh Thompson. Live. Produced by Police Productions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Q. Of course, Mark Bland, joined today by one Mr. Matt Krueger, as well as producer Bobby. As always, Dan Walsh is not here. He is on tour in Botswana.
As always, Dan Walsh is not here.
The Polar Vortex tour has moved to Botswana. It's going really well. Me and Bobby just talked to him on the phone before the show started, and he's doing great. He's doing absolutely great, which is weird because normally there is another person. He's had encephalitis. He has had, did he have herpes of his big toe? I think so.
He did.
He had herpes of the
typhoid fever.
He had typhoid fever.
Malaria.
He's had it all. He has literally had it all. And that individual happens to actually be joining us right now here on The Q. Ladies and gentlemen, Hall of Famer, successful radio show host, DC Chimes. How are you doing, DC?
Great. I thought Dan Walsh from South China Sea looking for that plane.
No. He's literally on the Polar Vortex tour in Botswana as we speak.
Botswana?
He was supposed to be on the Malaysian
flight. He's huge, dude. He's in Georgia. He's huge in Latvia. He's huge everywhere around the world.
Czechoslovakia!
Czechoslovakia, the new one, the one that Bobby reforms each year.
Botswana?
Yeah,
Botswana. Botswana? You gotta be kidding me.
I don't know. He texts me from underwater saying that he was looking for the plane, so.
All right, fair enough.
He's got no scuba gear.
He's got one of those military phones that, you know, the he can go under
satellite
the water.
Phones.
Right.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking about Obama And let's just change the subject here for a few minutes. I want to talk to you guys about this. Last week, a North Carolina drug company told the parents of a dying 7-year-old that they couldn't sell him potentially life-saving treatment because doing so would slow their efforts to get the drug to market. 7-year-old Josh Hardy had already beat cancer 3 times before he caught a virus in January that put him in heart and kidney failure, vomiting blood multiple times a day. His doctor said unapproved antiviral drug called, I'm going to stumble through this one, but I think it's brincifdofovir.
That's it.
Brincifdofovir could save his life. But when Josh's parents petitioned the manufacturer, Chimerix, for the compassionate care exception, they were shot down immediately. When asked how we will feel if Josh dies, and he's in critical condition so sadly that could happen so soon, the president of the company that makes the drug doesn't hesitate to answer. Horrible, said Kenneth Mock. He would feel horrible and heartbroken. But still, he said there's no way he's going to change his mind. There's no way he's going to give Josh this drug. The FDA's compassionate care exception allows patients with serious or life-threatening diseases to have exhausted currently available treatment options to access experimental drugs outside of the clinical trials. Mock told CNN that Chimerix wouldn't help Josh because of the high cost, approximately $50,000, and because it would divert manpower from the 50-odd employee company. But when a representative from MaxCure Foundation offered to cover those costs, Mock rebuffed him, apparently citing the ethics of the situation. An NYUE bioethicist said the companies can also be resistant to compassionate care exceptions because they can skew the drug trials. It's not just the $50,000 per patient that might make investors squeamish, Kaplan said, but compassionate cases can make a drug look bad. By definition, a compassionate use patients are extremely sick, might not do well with the drug. Companies have to report a poor outcome to the FDA in its application to the drug market, which therefore would put it in peril. But the bad press eventually outweighed those concerns, and the company found a workaround. Today, Chimerix announced Josh will be the first patient in a new clinical trial that is set to start this week coming up. I'm happy for Josh, and I'm happy for many patients, Mock told CNN. We've come up with a way of helping not just Josh, but helping other patients in need, and there are many. Now, the reason I brought this story up, guys, and you heard me tell everything, every piece of the information that I know, plus a little bit of side research that I've done,
correct,
hasn't led me to anything more than what I've told you. We have a sick child, okay? And I understand the whole idea of companies have to run, they have costs, they have overhead, they have things that they need to take care of, those things need to be paid for. But in this case, I think that this is a special situation, and I'm glad that the company is now finally jumping in with the kid and working with him.
Right.
But I want to talk about how we got to that point. Why did it have to go to a situation where the media had to get involved, all these bad things had to happen, where people's lives were kind of stressed heavily? Like, you're being told, hey, here's a drug that could potentially save your child, and we're not going to give it to you just because, in one case, we can't divert manpower and the cost is pretty high. And in another case, you say, we're not going to let somebody pay for that either because of the ethics of it.
And the worst part is, you know, the $50,000 cost wasn't a thing. The family had it covered. The family had the $50,000, but they said that it potentially would damage the possibility of this drug getting FDA approved for it to be able to be put on the market for other families. So why don't you, you know, sign the waiver? And the family apparently signed all the waivers.
It seems heartless.
They understood. Yes, it does seem heartless. But the family signed all these waivers that said they understood that if the son died because of something due to the drug, they understood. But this is the only possibility for this kid. He is, like you said, overcome cancer 3 other times. This is the only possible way that this kid will survive.
Why is health and life so easy to just justify throwing away? That's the question I really have.
I really don't think it is, though.
Like, but evidently it is, because you're the head of this drug manufacturer. You could easily just, like, swipe the pen and, hey, yeah, you know what? This is a good situation. We're going to try to help this young man out. You know, like, yeah, we might take a little bit of a hit, but let's be honest. These drugs, they really don't cost the amount of monies that these people claim they do. Like, we've had the discussion on the show. The only reason the United States of America has the highest health care costs in the world is because we literally just charge more. That's
right.
It.
Right.
They've done all the research. We just charge more. So these drugs don't cost. Like, at a certain point, it literally is just, you're being greedy. You just are heartless. Like, you just don't want to give in because you think it'll make you look weak. Or even if you have certain legitimate arguments, it's just bad.
I think what weirded me out was them saying that we don't want, like, if I understood you correctly, we don't want the drug to look bad,
right,
if it doesn't work. Well, here's an idea. If the drug doesn't work, don't sell it.
Right.
Right.
How are you going to know, though, unless you try it? You know, there's a certain
rabbits
point.
I did an interview once with a doctor, an oncologist, who was, during the interview, was actually in hiding. She would not tell anybody where
in
she
hiding?
Was.
Wow.
She was in hiding.
Okay.
She said that it's just so known in the oncology community that there's been a cure for cancer since the mid-90s. And that is such a huge industry.
And they make so much money.
Right. And her point was, think about it. So if the cure for cancer is revealed tomorrow, what happens to all of the Siteman Cancer Center and all those employees and doctors and pharmaceutical companies that make billions off cancer drugs? Where do they go? What happens?
Well, let's answer
they get to divert all of their skills and manpower and money into other diseases.
Well, let's ask that question between the four of us. Let's ask that question.
Cancer is a pretty big industry in itself.
Does it need to be an industry? If there is a cure, then they can, for one, they can sell that cure. Two, after they fix it, then they can divert all of that energy into solving something else.
Well, like AIDS. But her point was they can't, because if a private group has the information on that cure and they're not willing to share it with other pharmaceutical companies, then where do those cancer drugs? So I've got the drug that cures cancer. What happens to the other pharmaceutical companies with their thousands of cancer drugs?
And I understand it. So I guess the question at that point
they
is...
They go out of business and need to think up a new business model.
Right. So the question
that's
is...
The
we have to.
No company is too big to fail.
Matt,
absolutely.
I want to ask this
but
question of all of us.
That's the key. They go out of business.
I want to ask this question of all of us right here. If they could release the drug tomorrow to cure cancer, would you want them to do it, Matt?
Yes.
I'd be pissed to find out that they've had it all this time.
And didn't. But would you want it tomorrow to be released? Would you want it to be released?
Who with a conscience wouldn't?
Exactly. So that's my point. Like, what? Evidently, the people we're discussing have no conscience.
Well, right.
They're heartless people.
Do they not have family that has suffered with this disease?
Evidently, they don't.
I'm
evidently,
wondering
they have
if they
that.
Did have a family member that got cancer
did
and
they
give
it
knew
to
about a cure, would they give them the cure? And well, then, like, sign a waiver. You are never allowed to talk
about
this like
for the
rest of your
life. How
would you
like to be the guy who developed the cure for cancer and it's legit and you've known it for years, and then down the road, 10 years, your son, daughter, your wife, whatever, gets cancer that your drug would have cured, and you're looking at them on the deathbed, and because of what he just brought up, you basically just watch them die.
It's not their fault, though, because the lady we interviewed, the doctor we interviewed, was on the team that found this cure, that tested it on thousands of patients, but she said every person on that team had their life threatened and they're all in hiding.
That's so weird. I just, like, I understand, like, that, you know, that almost goes down the road of conspiracy theories like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
And it's so weird. That's the only thing that I question about conspiracy theories is when I hear things like that. It's the fact that, you know what? There are people that are just like that. And it's not really a conspiracy theory so much as it just walks down roads that you just don't want to travel.
Well, like, it's the whole, with the disease of AIDS, like, no one really knows where AIDS came from. They think that what happened is someone altered chemicals and it caused AIDS within someone.
I thought they had figured out that it was in a special tribe in southern or middle Africa.
Not that I've ever heard of. Something about,
because they eat.
I heard somebody screwed a monkey.
Yeah, no, that was what I also...
No. What I heard was, there was two monkeys that are of different species.
Right.
And, like, supposedly there's a sickness that the one monkey gets, but if they interact with this other monkey tribe, like, sexually or whatever like that, it created basically an uber virus becomes AIDS, that was unable to be cured and started killing things. Well, there's tribes within those parts of Africa and around the world, and I'm not blaming Africa, like, this is the story that I've read and researched and stuff like that. They eat monkeys and they eat animals because they have to live, and so therefore when they are cleaning these animals, the blood is fresh. It sometimes gets into sores and they have sores on their feet or in their mouth, or it splatters on their face or whatever, and that's how it got into the blood systems of the first people. And therefore, it started to be transmitted person to person through sexual contact and things like that.
I read that exact same thing in a zombie story once.
Really?
They cooked up some zombie.
DC almost just said that. He's
just
like,
shut it down.
No, you get into all these conspiracy theories, and I think that's where people you lose people. Because
true.
I don't believe they're all. AIDS isn't the industry that cancer is.
True.
Cancer is an industry. It's a business, and a huge, big business.
More people get cancer than people get AIDS.
But wouldn't you say, though, that AIDS is as well? I mean, every time you buy something that's red, it gets donated to cancer or to AIDS.
Well, but cancer,
or diabetes.
Cancer can affect up to, you know, 3 out of 10 people in this country, where AIDS is not at that level.
I think, isn't diabetes more than cancer, though?
I think
diabetes might affect more than cancer does.
But the industry, think about it this way. The amount of drugs, the cost of those drugs in cancer treatment is greater than diabetes.
Of course it is. And the reason it is because they know that they have a high market volume for it, and then they're going to be able to get their money. Like, I'm not saying
it's
that
the pharmaceutical companies. They're evil.
I'm not saying that those people shouldn't be able to make money. You know, I have inherent migraines. I'm not going to try to equate cancer to migraines, but I will say this. I have inherent migraines. They're horrible.
Are they conservatives?
They are conservatives at times. They are conservatives at times. But I have to take shots in my arm of this medicine called sumatriptan. Imitrix is its actual
like
professional name. And so therefore it's expensive. Like, I see the cost breakdown when I get my medical bills and things like that. Like, I pay a copay to Walgreens or wherever I get it from for a certain amount of money. Just for two shots or vials of the shots, it's like $175 for just two vials. That's just two shots.
Wow.
So I'm just like blown away by the cost of that, because here's the funny thing. My mom and dad, they go on a Caribbean trip on a ship, you know, and they go around to the different islands. They walk into pharmaceutical places, like, you know, basically a Walgreens down in the Caribbean.
Correct.
Okay. They can buy sumatriptan over the counter, literally, like it's Tylenol. They don't even have to have, like, you have to have a prescription to get it here in the United States. They can just buy it over the counter, same exact levels that I buy it at, for like 10 pills. $6. For me, it costs $10 in copay, and it's like $75 for a box of pills here in the United States. If I was to buy that box straight out, it's $75. Same box, same pills, same manufacturer, $6, all 10 pills. Like, that's ridiculous. That's the only reason that I sometimes go down the road of saying we should have universal health care. Because let's be honest, health is the most important thing to every single one of us in this room, because without it, we die.
Correct.
Therefore, all the BS that we argue about and complain about, whether it's politics or religion or whatever, doesn't matter. You're not here to be a part of it. It's not a part of your life. You're done. You're gone.
Right.
So none of that matters. Health is a God-given thing, right? They always talk about what's God-given or not. Like, what do you have a right to? Evidently, we do have a right to breathing and life.
Correct.
Can that be taken away? Yes, it can.
No, I'm with you on that. I'm not a... I'm pretty conservative, but I would agree. I think we do need...
You are pretty much DC Tea Party Chimes.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I'm not
that conservative.
Not a Tea Party.
No, you're not.
But I do think we need a system like that, because there are way too many people that are denied the basic thing that you just mentioned, health, because they don't have the money for it, and that's messed up.
It really is. And other countries, they don't have the problem. Like when, you know, everybody always slammed Michael Moore for doing movies like Bowling for Columbine and Sicko and things like that. And the funny thing is that when he did the movie about the healthcare industry, I think that's Sicko, is the movie, he goes around and talks to doctors in universal healthcare countries, and everybody's always claiming, well, Michael Moore, he's just splicing and cutting and trying to spin it the way he wants it to look. And it's like, no, this was like, you could tell anybody who's worked in the movie industry or understands film and stuff like that, you could tell this is just a straight cut 5-minute interview that he just spliced end. You know, there's no multiple angles and cuts and stuff like that.
Right.
It's just a single camera, two guys talking type thing. And the individual is a doctor in England, and he's like, I make $65,000 a year. I save people's lives.
Right.
I'm very happy. I'm fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, $65,000 a year is pretty good money. Solid.
I lived in England for a time as a kid with my family, and the healthcare system there was fantastic. And the best part was going to the pharmacy and realizing that they cannot charge you more than $5 for any drug.
Exactly. And not only just that, but they can't charge you more than $5 for extended amounts. So, like, whether you get a 30-day prescription, a 60, or 120, it's the same $5.
Yeah. The next time you pay $650 for a prescription, like you were talking about earlier, a bottle of 30 pills is $650.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be all for universal health care.
Exactly.
Now, the only problem, though, that I see with the universal health care system is from what I've heard in, like, the Canadian system, where you sit there, you may have a cancerous tumor or something that needs to be operated on, but you have to wait on this waiting list potentially for months or years before that is taken care of. You could have passed already by the time that it's up to
you.
But
they've addressed that in multiple research and stuff, like when they're talking about universal health care, and said that those numbers and those opinions are way skewed in comparison to reality. You know what I'm saying? Here's the truth.
Yeah, I didn't see that as a problem in England.
Universal health care, honestly, is not a bad thing, because in most cases, like Matt, I've known Matt for a long time. I can't honestly tell you that I've seen Matt dog sick more than one time in the last 7 years.
I don't even know if you could claim once.
Yeah, I mean, no, there was, you were like, this was like probably like 5 years ago. You were in your basement 2 or 3 days, just horrible hacking. We were trying to do a show. We were trying to record audio. Like, we even had to cut that night. Like, there have been, but one time, this man would go one time to the doctor. Literally. Right. Do you see what I'm saying?
In I didn't even years. Go to the doctor that time.
I probably not. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I have not been to the doctor in years. But I can't even tell.
Most cases, people are just getting sniffle medicine. You know, they're just getting some Levaquin for like a sinus infection, or, you know, they might have sprained their wrist or broken arm, and then they set it. And
here's
they go,
the
like,
thing.
That's
if
all
you,
they're doing.
If you sprain your wrist, what's the doctor going to do for you? Give you pain medication? What's
Hopefully.
That going to do? No. What's that going to do? The world, America has too much pain medication going on anyway. You got the sniffles.
But the argument.
Guess what? Antibiotics might help you in the short term.
Hey.
But now what's going to happen is that you're going to develop immunity.
Back off.
You're going to develop immunity towards all these antibiotics. You know why I never get sick?
What's wrong with Oxycontin for the sniffles? Back off.
That's a good point.
I think
I think one of the reasons I never get sick is, for one, I don't put all the antibiotics in my body. My body has its own antibiotic system already pre-installed. You know, we all do.
If this was 1875, you'd already been dead. You've just been dead.
Maybe.
Well, I don't think so, though. If you look back at the people back in those days.
Those people died early, man.
They did die early.
I am one healthy dang individual.
But the people that were healthy because they didn't put drugs and crap into their body. They didn't have the preservatives that we have in canned foods and stuff like that.
Right.
They didn't have all the junk going into their system.
Maybe that's why
and
we live longer.
Stuff.
All the preservatives are just
but
preserving
it is,
us.
No, well, no. That's the stuff that gets us sick. That's what causes the problems.
Yeah.
You know, I was just sitting there talking to a friend of mine who works at a supplement store, and he's telling me, you know, we're sitting there talking about, because I'm trying to lose weight, I want to do, you know, all this different stuff. You know, the main thing you need to do is completely flush your system, because of the fact that we have so many preservatives and extra things added to our food. You go to McDonald's, that damn cheeseburger that you just ate could have been sitting there for 3 weeks and looked and everything the exact same way.
Yeah. I think a lot of what America has is, I don't necessarily
Cancer's bad.
I don't think we necessarily have like a healthcare problem. I mean, okay, there's a healthcare problem. But instead of trying to react, instead of being reactive medicinally, I think we need to be proactive. We need to start taking better care of ourselves. We need to start getting up off of our asses, start going outside more, start communicating with others more, start eating better, start actually living life.
You just want to regress back to the 1980s, do you not?
No, I think it's a very good point, because I think you see in a lot of other countries, there is a different way of living. The lifestyle is different. I remember going back again to the time that I lived in England. They walked everywhere.
Absolutely.
When it came time to go to the grocery store, they walked to the grocery store. And so it makes a difference how much food you get, because you got to carry that
food absolutely.
Back. So you're eating a lot lighter, and you're healthier you're walking.
If you got to go to the store every 2 or 3 days, and you're having to ride your bike or take your cart or walk, you know, and you can't carry a whole bunch, you're going there, and it might be 2, 3, 4 miles each time.
Every single time.
They're walking to work. They're walking back from work. I mean, they're not relying
on... You almost want to become regressive as opposed to progressive. Right. You want to get back to the 1980s.
And there was such a smaller idea of community. You worked within your community so that you could walk instead of having to drive 60 miles to go to work.
Right. I remember meeting families in Germany, in Holland, in England that didn't even own a car. They didn't own a car. They had a family of, you know, husband, wife, three kids.
People that own cars. I think that that's the problem in the middle. Like, our viewpoint, guys, especially, like, I know that you're not originally from here, D.C., but, like, all of us have grown up and lived here most of our lives. You know, I think that we have the Midwestern viewpoint.
I'm not from America.
Well, fair enough. But I'm just saying.
America.
We Eagles. Patriots. Patriotism. Don't tread on me, Phil Dynasty. Stop
Jefferson
it.
And
listen,
Washington.
Mossy Oak.
Okay, here's the situation. We got the viewpoint from the Midwestern point of view.
Right.
Like other cities and other places that have built up where there's a lot of walking, like New York and Chicago and L.A. and places like that.
Correct.
Like, they have a much different viewpoint of how they like. I think it is the sun in L.A. I think the fact that people have the sun there, the beach is always there to remind you it's a place to go and wear, like, a skimpy bathing suit.
Right.
Makes them want to continue to look good.
Right.
So that anytime they can hit the surfboard. Like,
yeah, man. You got to take in all that Coke to get that Coke body.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got Lou Ferrani coming up here from the Gambino crime family. He's got a new show on Discovery Channel. He's going to be on the show here in just a few minutes. But before that, March 27th, 7 p.m. at the Chaffetz Arena, Justin Moore, Randy Houser, and Josh Thompson live in concert. We've got tickets to give away on the Q. Go to theqnow.com. And what we're going to do is... we're going to give them away for free. It ain't going to cost you a single thing. A free date night on us to go see Justin Moore, Randy Houser, and Josh Thompson. Click the contest button at the top of the QNow.com page. Go in and enter your name, and we will give you if you win, a free pair of passes to go see this amazing concert at the Chaffetz Arena. We're going to take a quick break here on the Q. We are at the top of the hour. We'll be back on CBS and Fox affiliates around the United States right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Q. Of course, Mark Bland, joined today by Matt Krueger, as well as my main man, producer Bobby. We've been talking a little bit about Obamacare. We've been talking a little bit about cancer treatments. We've been talking about a lot of different edgy, controversial subjects. But let us not waste our time any further. Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone right now is the host of the show Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel, a gentleman by the name of Lou Ferrant.
Hey, thanks for having me, brother.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the time. Excited to have you on because I just to explain everybody how this worked out. Like, I was literally just flipping through the channels the other day. I was watching another show. Out of absolutely nowhere, Lou's show shows up, and I'm a huge mafioso fan and, like, just the history of the families and the things like that. And I was just blown away by first thing this guy's story is, because I start researching it on the internet as I'm, like, watching the show. Yeah. And then on top of that, I get into the actual show, and this guy is amazing to listen to. He's just really good at what he does. Lou, welcome to the queue. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Yeah, so the shows were 18th Street, which is a gang in El Salvador. So we flew into El Salvador, 700 murderers locked in a prison. I went in with them. So that's like hopping into a piranha tank. And I lived with them. I locked up with them. I kind of got to the nitty-gritty of what drives the gang, what drives the shot callers, the leaders. And people tell me, you know, are you nervous going into these places? And sad to say, I lived in the maximum security for years. I did 8.5 years in the pen.
Wow.
And so I kind of like, you know, I hate to say it, but I know it like I know my own house. But anyway, the show went over great. It rated through the roof. So they're airing another 2 episodes tomorrow night, 8 to 10. The first one is I go visit the Camorra in Italy, which is the Naples Mafia.
Wow.
And I got high access. I met with the top dude who ran the Naples Mafia. It was in the middle of a war. They were killing each other left and right. And then the following episode, from 9 to 10, I go to the Philippines, and I locked in a prison called Bilibid with 20,000 inmates. It's a world of its own with a wall around it.
Now, Lou,
unbelievable.
Lou, you talk about, you just said that you were in maximum security for 8.5 years. Can you say where you were?
Yeah, yeah. So the worst place I was in was Lewisburg Penitentiary in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's an old, it's like an old Gothic, it looks like an old Gothic castle. It's got these big walls and towers, and it was probably built in the Gothic style. But you drive up there, and you know you've entered the gates of hell. And my very first day in population, day one, the boss of the Westies, Jimmy Coonan, the Westies is the Irish Mafia in New York, and their last big boss, who was like the John Gotti of the Irish mob, was a guy by the name of Jimmy Coonan. He was like a dad to me, like a father, and he sees me, "Hey, Louie, what's up? We've been waiting for you." They heard I was coming before I got there, so he introduces me to everybody, all the big shots in the yard. They call lockdown. We go in from the yard. Very first day in population, just landed in the pen. The alarms are going off left and right. The Aryan Brotherhood hacked to death and killed two black Muslims and gutted them.
Yeah, I had a question for you. I want to cut you.
And threw them on the floor. And I'm like, whoa, where did I land?
Lou, I had a quick question for you. Now, people have always said that, like, when you get into jail or prison like that, you know, obviously you have to, like, side up with a crew or a group of people, or else in most cases they consider you a little fishy. They're just going to take you out, or they're going to hurt you really badly. Did you feel that you had to do that, or were you already taken care of?
When you go in as a mobster, you're automatically, you know, you have your Italians in there in the federal prisons. Most of the Italian mobsters are racketeering charges, which are federal crimes. So anywhere I went in the federal system, including Lewisburg Penitentiary, we had mobsters, and the Irish and the Italians stick together close. And then we have allies.
Really?
The head of the Latin Kings was one of our allies. The head of the Aryans, actually, until they made that move and got taken off the compound, was also our allies. But anyway, you make allies in there, and you do it to survive. I'm not in favor of the Aryan Brotherhood's ideals.
Right.
I mean, it's survival. It's day-by-day survival. But when I decided to break away from the mob, I did a lot of thinking. And I said to myself, you know, I never snitched on nobody. Never ratted. I faced life in prison. And I told these guys, listen, I'll serve it if I got it. No problem. But if I ever get out of here, I'm going on my own. And I did a lot of thinking. And I said, you know what? The mafia never made me tough. I made the mafia tough.
Right.
So what do I need this for? So if I got into a beef, I handled it on my own, but if the Italians got into a beef, or the Irish, or any of our allies, I put my sneakers on, I strapped up, and I went there to back them up, because they, you know, they still were our allies, and I wasn't going to be disloyal to, you know, that's politics in there, unfortunately. But and sometimes, you know what? Sometimes, you know, there's strong racial divides, and that bothered me, because I don't have an ounce of prejudice in me. I wasn't raised like that. Gosh, if you said the N-word in my house, my mother would kill you.
Hey, no.
So you just didn't get away with that.
Lou.
But anyway, you know, at times, though, the New York blacks were our allies, too, because then it's where you come from, and we kind of get along, and even though there's a strong racial divide in prison, that trumps the color, and
Yo.
So that made me happy, because I could have all kinds of friends at times. It depends on the prison, though. A lot of politics in there.
Hey, now, Lou, I have a bunch of questions for you. I really do, because like I said, I'm kind of a historian in this stuff, so I have people I want to ask you about, as well as I want to talk about the show Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel, and, okay, so first question I have for you. Obviously, the most famous and well-known mobster of the last 50 years solid is John Gotti, by far. Mm-hmm. Nobody is more famous than John Gotti, and you were a part of his crew, his clique, and you were a part of that family. And so, like, what was it like dealing with John Gotti?
Okay, so here's the best way I could explain it. And I love history, too, by the way. I fell in love with reading in jail. Never read a book in my life. I'm in jail. I'm locked in a cell 24/7. Picked up a book.
You got time, right?
My first book was difficult to get through, but eventually they got easier, and I was eventually reading a book a day, and I did that for years. So the best historical example I could connect it to is like the cult of personality, like Mao Zedong, Joseph Stalin, where they have this cult of personality where they're almost like a god to you. And that's
charismatic.
John Gotti had that in the Gambino family.
Very charismatic.
We all looked up to him. We wanted to be like him. If he wore a purple sweatsuit today, we all went to the store that week and bought purple sweatsuits. If he wore a Rolex Presidential that week, we all went and bought Rolex Presidentials. He was the cult of personality.
So you were
rolling pretty heavy.
And when he what he said went. And I'm going to tell you, I got to tip my hat to him. He did a lot of bad things. I'm a different man right now. I don't respect the things that I did or that he did now, looking back. I regret the things I did, and I'm not condoning what he did. But I will say this. Within that world, he lived according to the rules of that life and did not break them. He was a little showy. That was the only thing he went off course with, and he shouldn't have. But other than that, he went to bat for his guys. It could be $1 billion on the line. If somebody wanted to take my life, he didn't care about the money. He was going to protect me. And his whole family was like that. They were stand-up guys. None of them ever ratted. The papers only hear about John Gotti. He had brothers. He had Richie. He had Peter. He had Junior was his son. He had a nephew, right. Richie, a nephew, Joey. None of them ratted. Vinny, they're all stand-up guys. The Gottis are like, really, in that world, they live by the rules, they play by the rules, and they go to bat for their guys, and they never betray you. And the other thing, too, is the move he made, which was before my time. I was a kid stealing cars and running a chop shop when he took over the family. I started coming around later when I started hijacking trucks in the 88, 89,
right.
When John was in power already. But when I was a kid, and John took over that family, I learned the stories after when I got in. They said, Lou, he was forced to take the family. Paul Castellano was going to kill him or his brother.
Right.
And he had no choice but to make a move. You know,
and it was a bold move.
It
was a bold move. A lot of people don't, like, if you don't know the history of John Gotti, basically, he took out Paul Castellano in probably the most visual way that you could possibly do it at a steakhouse in New York City, like, in the middle of December, right?
Yeah, and there was a reason for that. He wanted to make a statement.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, there were other gangsters, and there's five families. There's other families that are very powerful that you probably ran around. And I've seen a lot of movies. I've seen a lot of the shows. I've read a lot of the books and stuff like that. What do you think of guys like, is it Michael Francis?
Yeah, so, I don't know. He changed his life around. So I have a lot of respect for him changing his life around, and it's genuine, the changes that he made. I don't know the exact particulars of his case, but I am one who feels strongly about what we do in life. We have to pay the fee for it. You pay the piper. And when I was pinched, although I changed my life and didn't feel the same way anymore once I was in prison about that whole world, I did not think that gave me, you know, the nod to say, okay, I'm going to snitch on people now that I want a free pass. And a lot of guys say, I see the light now. I want to change my life. And I said, I see the light. I want to change my life, but I deserve to be punished. And I did my time. And I'm not sure if that's the case with Michael. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to look into it.
No, I understand.
I just have heard things that, you know, I'm not sure what he did. But again, I do respect him for changing his life around. That change is genuine in the end. He never went back to that. I knew his brother, and I met his father a couple of times, Sonny. And I knew his brother John. His brother John became a snitch, unfortunately.
Now,
and his brother John ratted on the father. But
now, you're talking about rats. You're talking about rats, and the most famous rat who literally had a movie made about his life was Henry Hill. And I'm sure, like, what was, at the time period that was all going down is when you were kind of, like, under John and doing your hijackings
yeah,
and things
so
like
I
that.
I was around when the movie was made. And, you know, the son, Jimmy Burke had a son. And Jimmy Burke's son, without saying his name, he has a legitimate son. He has one son that passed away in the street life. He got killed. Jimmy Burke was Robert De Niro played Jimmy Conway. And Jimmy Conway was really, in real life, a guy by the name of Jimmy Burke.
Okay.
And Jimmy Burke, Robert De Niro, from what I understand, played him to the T. Now, I didn't know Jimmy Burke personally, but I know his son got killed, and his other son was a dear friend of mine who became an attorney. Nice kid. That kid came to us while we were hanging out one day, and he says, I got a tape that I just got sent by De Niro. It's about my dad. You guys want to watch it? Yeah, let's go. We heard plenty of stories about his dad. So we all piled into this kid, Jimmy's kid's house, and we watched the Goodfellas for the first time before it came out in the movies. And everything I had heard about Jimmy Burke all my life was portrayed perfectly in the movie. And the other thing, too, is I know, and there's a guy who just got pinched a couple of weeks ago in New York who was charged with being part of the LaStanza heist. I don't want to mention his name because he was like a dad to me at one time,
too. No, I understand.
And I used to call him my uncle. And the news called me to comment, and I refused to comment. I said he was too close to me. I don't want to get involved with it. But anyway, he told me about the inside players during that heist and who was involved, etc. And one of the guys And nothing that the statute isn't up already. It's just everything we know on TV, so I'm not hiding any secrets.
Right, of course, yeah.
But what he told me is that Joe Pesci played, he played him to the T as far as personality, but in real life, he was a real tall, handsome guy. And he really, really did. He liked shiny shoes. He liked dressing like to the nines. But in real life, he was a tall, handsome guy. And they got Joe Pesci to play the part because Joe Pesci nailed it as far as the guy's personality. And the other one I heard is real, too, about the guy who got clipped, the guy in the bar.
Right.
I heard that was a real story.
Oh, no,
that
I would assume.
My time.
I would assume that everything that happened in the movie was probably 100% true. My question I had was when you're around Gotti and this movie comes out and Henry Hill has basically put himself in the crosshairs of every single family by doing what he did. Obviously, he's not a very popular... Now, like, many years later, he goes on Stern. He's very open. He's very public before he passes away and all that. But back then, I'm sure, like, what was the, like... What was John Gotti? What was your opinion? What was the other heads of the families?
I mean,
like, where did they...
What happened at the top. Although I saw the hierarchy of my family, the guys who ran the family, I rubbed elbows with them every day. But they make decisions up top, and there's guys in the family that do different things. I wasn't a killer. I'm not a guy who goes around killing people. I'm not bloodthirsty. Can I defend myself? Would I have defended myself? Yes.
Were you a made man?
I was not. So what happens is you go on a list, and the list gets passed around, and if nobody objects, you get straightened out. I was put on the list. They passed the list around. Nobody objected, and I got locked up. So here I am in jail going, oh, for crying out loud, I missed my chance. I worked so hard for this. This was my life. I can't believe it was taken away from me by the FBI. And by the grace of God, again, once I changed my life, I said, you know what? I got pulled off the street just in time. It made it easier to leave. And now all the kids that were on that list with me and worked their way up with me, all my dear friends, over the next 6 months after I got locked up, went for the initiation, burnt the saint, the whole thing, and got straightened out. Now, here's the rub, and I feel bad for them. I straightened my life out. I turned my life around. I came home from prison. I've done nothing but good. And now all those poor guys are going through their headaches now, and they're at an age where it's going to kill them. They're either going to die in jail, or they're going to have to rat or kill themselves because it's over. And that's sad to me. So I thought what I thought was a curse when I got picked
that
up
is so heavy.
Turned out to be the biggest blessing of my life.
That is super heavy. Now, like I said, I do a lot of history, a lot of research. I want to ask you about a specific individual who is extremely well known. And please correct me if I have the name wrong, because you probably know exactly who I'm talking about. I'm talking about a guy who went by the nickname the Grim Reaper, and I think his name was Joe Scarpa.
His name was Gregory Scarpa.
Gregory Scarpa, that's his name.
Yeah,
okay,
so I'm going to tell you about this guy.
This dude?
I don't know if I could say this word.
Hold on. Before you go any further, Lou. Before you go any further, Lou.
This guy killed friends of mine, just to let you know.
Lou, that's what I was going to say. Before you go any further, I just want to let everybody know. Evidently, when I watch some of the things, there are certain individuals that pop up, and whenever they pop up in the stories or the history or the whatever, they're only mentioned in a very slight way, a little bit. They're not talked about a whole bunch, but like whenever they're talked about, it's like the most dastardly, demented stuff potential.
Yeah.
And his name comes up more than anyone else in regards to that stuff.
So I'm going to give you a couple of examples of the kind of guy this guy is. First of all, he killed dozens of people, and he killed friends of mine, people I knew, people I sat and broke bread with, people I liked, and not bad people. I'll give you a couple of examples. One was an old man who he reached out to. He needed to talk to him on the street. The old man was an old-time mobster. He was sort of like semi-retired. He didn't bother with people. And he says, I want to talk to you about something Scarpa did. And the old man sends word back, and he says, you know, I heard a couple of rumors about you, because he'd been a rat for like 30 years, Scarpa, on the street. He'd been answering to the FBI that long.
That's right,
So, you know, I mean, the old man heard a couple of things or surmised something. So the old man sent word back, and he says, you know, I heard a couple of rumors, but I don't want to, you know, say anything. He says, but, you know, between me and you, I'd rather not meet with you. I'm really retired. Scarpa says, gee, somebody's going to uncover me. Let me run over and kill this guy right away. And he did. So the old man was stupid enough, though, to put his thoughts on Front Street, which was sad. But he got killed because of it. And you know, I mean, another time he was in a social club. and he killed a young girl. He was dancing with her. I forget the reason. I heard somebody told me years ago. This is all out in the open. The FBI knows his stuff. And he dipped the girl as he was dancing. He pulled out a gun and shot her in the head.
Wow.
This is not with the. That's not a real mob.
That's not cool stuff right there. Like that's
not cool. He wrapped
that's
her up
insanity.
In the, rubber, in the trunk, and that was that. To me, that's despicable. That's disgusting. You know, I couldn't kill somebody first of all for $1 zillion. I knew how to make money without killing people. So why? And the mob has different people for different things. They would never. They don't need me to kill. They got guys that like to kill. Scarpa was a guy who liked to kill, and he was like the devil, and that's why they called him the Grim Reaper.
Now, Bobby's got a question for you, real quick, Lou.
Lou. Okay. So in all these, you know, mobster movies, TV shows that when mobsters are portrayed, and they do off somebody, as they say. There's always the thing of tying their body to a you know, concrete, cement, or whatever, throwing them in the river. How often does that actually happen?
I'll be honest with you. You know, when somebody, and I had a lot of friends that died, when somebody disappeared, I don't know what happened because I don't go there and ask questions. I just used to assume. And I'll tell you, this is an interesting insight into how I felt about the mob. If somebody disappeared, you just assume there was a real reason for it. He went against the Borgata, the family.
The less you know, the better.
And you don't ask questions. Because if you ask questions, the guys are going to go, the guys that did it are going to go, what are you wearing, a wire? What do you want to know? What are you, interrogating us? You know, and you're in trouble. You shouldn't be asking questions. It looks like you're poking around where your nose don't belong.
It's all on a need-to-know basis.
Happened, I sucked it up. And I just said, hey, guy must have broke the rules. He was here yesterday. He's not here today. It's not my business. And that's that. And you don't want to know because you don't want to be accomplice to murder either. So you better you don't know. When I'm in jail and I'm locked up with all these guys from the different five families and everybody's indictments are laid bare on the table. We're playing pinochle. We're all talking about what we're in jail for. We're locked up for this. I got to fight that. I got to fight this. I got another lawyer for the other case. And I started to realize that a lot of guys I knew that died were killed for nothing more than money, and that killed me.
Oh, my gosh.
That beat me up like you can't imagine. Sammy the Bull was killing people, so he would take a partner, open up a construction company, get the guy to put up $1 million, get the company up and running, and then clip the guy. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's horrible.
That's not what the mob was about, that I was taught by the old-timers. Another guy killed somebody because he wanted his wife.
Wow.
You want somebody's wife and you kill the guy?
Jeez.
You can't find 6 million women in the world. You can't find another woman that
Lou.
You got to kill this guy for his wife.
I got one
and
last.
Me,
I got
that broke my heart. I says I can't believe I'm part of this evil organization that does these things because I don't. This is disgusting to me.
Listen, Lou.
Cards with them. Go ahead,
Lou. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. I'm not trying to be rude. We only got a few more minutes here with you, and I got one last question for you.
You got it,
that I know you're going to answer really well because this has been an amazing interview, and I really do appreciate it.
It's been fantastic.
This has been a fantastic. Like literally, I'm going to have you back on every single week for the next 2 years.
Listen, before you ask it.
All right.
My show is on tomorrow night, Discovery Channel. 8 to 10. 8 to 9 is the Camorra. 9 to 10 is the Philippines. The Commandos. You gotta watch it. All your listeners gotta tune in. And it's off the hook. Go ahead. Let's
all right,
hear it.
The question is, going into these different places to do this show, who impressed you the most, top to bottom? Maybe it's a show that hasn't come on yet, but like, who has impressed you the most? Like, blew your mind completely, and you were like, I had no clue.
Okay, so you're talking about, like, leadership of a gang member?
I'm talking about whether it's leadership of a gang member, a specific person, or just an entire crew.
I will say this. So the 18th Street Gang in El Salvador, the shot caller in the prison was a guy by the name of Sharky. And the head guy, he ruled over, like, 30,000 gang members, was a guy by the name of Viejo Lin. These guys were ruthless killers. But I will say, person to person, sitting down with them, they were absolute perfect gentlemen, and they loved their wives, they loved their families. They grew up in a war-torn country where blood and guts was an everyday occurrence, and they didn't think much about, you know, taking part in violence because that's all they ever knew. And to me, it was sad that they lived like that and grew up like that. After your listeners, see the other two episodes tomorrow night, Camorra in the Philippines. The following week, I think, is Poland, but they're going to rerun the El Salvador episode, and they're going to rerun the New Mexico episode, which is the two that aired last week.
I would recommend
18th Street, and you'll like these guys, even though they're killers. It's sad what they did. I'm not condoning it. I feel bad for every victim. I feel bad for every mother who cries. All I'm saying is, They came from a war-torn, blood and guts country that was torn by civil war. They grew up as little kids with blood all around them, and they don't know anything else, and it's sad. And when that country gets right, they're going to produce kids that are good people because they have good inside them. They just don't know how to get it out because they're so used to surviving, and that's sad. But anyway, I'll wrap it up with that.
No, that's fine. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, first off, I want to, Lou, we're at the bottom of the hour. I want to first off say, everybody needs to check out the new show, Inside the Gangster's Code.
I'm going
to
go check it out.
On that Discovery awesome. Channel. Go to your AT&T Uverse, your Comcast, your Warner Brothers, whatever cable system you have, wherever you watch TV.
Go to your neighbor's house.
Go to DiscoveryChannel.com. Check out Lou Ferrante and Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel every single week. Lou, it has been one. First off, congratulations on turning your life around, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to even sit down and talk with us. I can't wait to like literally get you back on the show again. But thank you so much, sir.
Awesome. Thank you. Just give me a buzz when you want to hang. And good night to you and all your listeners. Have a great night, guys.
All right. Well,
thanks, Lou.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lou Ferrante, of former member of the Gambino crime family, the head of Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel. We're going to take a quick break here on the Cube. We'll be back right after this.
Attention, active duty, National Guard, Reserve, and retired veterans. If you or a loved one was injured while serving our country anytime after October 2001, you may qualify for up to $100,000 in tax-free cash TSGLI benefits, even if the injury was not related to military service. Also, if you have been denied VA disability benefits for a service-related issue, we may be able to help. To find out if you have a claim, call 888-241-9088. That's 888-241-9088.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back.
What are you walking
all over? My goodness, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the queue. Of course, producer Bobby can't help himself whenever he hears catchy music. He has to dance.
Small town USA, baby.
By the way, you must have gone somewhere before the show because you are bouncing off the
wall. Boom, baby, bang.
You got bang. What are you talking? What is bang? You keep saying this. I don't understand.
All right, bang.
That's something meth heads say.
Evidently. Bang is this great new energy drink that I just found, and holy crap, can't come down. I am on a high.
You are on.
Woo!
My goodness.
Bang!
I almost want to send you out on the Poplar Street Bridge buck naked if I could. That'd be amazing.
I would do it.
Maybe go steal some street signs for me or something.
Hell, I've casted spells at Jack in the Box with Harry Potter. I've gone through car washes and diapers. It's not a big deal. Bang, bang, baby.
Wow, Rock'em
Sock'em. Rock'em Sock'em Poppers.
I haven't heard Rock'em Woo-hoo! Sock'em in like 5 years. I haven't heard Rock'em brought it Sock'em.
Back. A little bit of background on that. Ladies and gentlemen, me and Tony Cabral, who's been on the show, Ace Films, we used to do a show called Primetime with Mark and Tony. Bobby, when he first got into radio, before his Stephen DC days, before all that, he used to just come in and sit in on our show. And one day, we just started talking about Rock'em Sock'em Boppers, and Bobby just started going nuts.
We started talking about things that made your childhood awesome.
Yeah, we were talking about games from our childhood.
Yes. Something like that.
I was there that day.
And you remember I used to punch my brother in the face, and I would just yell around the house, Rock'em Sock'em Boppers!
Dude, you got up and ran around the studio like Rocky.
It was awesome. Right.
Screaming Rock'em Sock'em Boppers.
We are joined today by Matt Kruger, who's here, and you just heard him, as well as DC Chimes joining us today. You can catch his show every single day of the week, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, at theviperrocks.com worldwide on the internet, as well as here in St. Louis on 100.7 The Viper.
I tell you what, man, I hear a lot of people talking about that Viper station.
That dang Viper station.
That
yes.
dang Viper
no, well,
station.
Not like no. that dang Viper station. No,
how is radio going for you back now in the St. Louis area? You know, you were gone for a little while.
Yeah,
so now you're
yeah,
back.
Bit.
You know, how are you like mending back in? Like
what back in?
Mending back in.
Oh,
are
mending
you,
back
like,
in.
Are you just like
it's,
running
yeah. It's been a blast so far. Rock and roll, baby. Rock and roll.
Rock and Sock'em Boppers!
All right, ladies.
I don't want to get him fired up again.
Bang, bang!
Well, it's time for us to do Game On, Game Off, our favorite section of the show that we do every single week. A little bit of background on this. A gentleman by the name of Jensen Karp runs a show called Get Up On This, a very popular podcast that I am a huge fan of. We decided that as a little bit of a tribute to him every single week, because those guys are great people, and we had Jensen on. It was one of our favorite shows me and Bobby ever did.
Absolutely.
We decided to start doing a thing called Game On, Game Off, which is basically the idea of we try to hip you to cool new things that you don't know about, and then we also give you something that you need to stop worrying about, stop doing in your life, whatever it is. Could be a trend, could be a website, could be anything in the world. Jordan Grace told us to stop twerking, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So
people should game stop on
social game on social experiments and game off twerking.
Yes, that's it. So that's the way the game works. I'm going to start off this week because my game on is actually something that has just went viral on the internet. It is amazing. It's actually boosted the healthcare.gov website's traffic like tenfold.
Okay,
it's a video from funnyordie.com that is Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. Now, if you know Zach Galifianakis, he's the weird brother from the Hangover. From the Hangover movies and stuff like that. He hosts a show that he used to do legit. Now, of course, it's a little bit more set up. He's kind of famous now, so it's a little harder for people to not know who Zach is. But back in the day, he used to do a show called Between Two Ferns, is when nobody knew who he was. And he'd get really famous people like Bruce Willis, you know, Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore, all kinds of different like high-end individuals come on the show. They didn't realize that it was an act or whatever it was, and he would literally blow their minds. Like the Charlize Theron one is one of my favorites of all time. Anyway, he recently did one with President Barack Obama.
You're not really, really into this, are you?
No.
This is the worst one ever.
No, this is not the worst one ever. Have you seen the Funny or Die thing? It is funny.
Barack is so, and I know the whole thing's fake anyway.
I love the idea that he just goes at him, though.
But he's not a very good actor.
Of course he's not. Of course
he's not a very good anything.
I think
I'm not bashing the guy.
I will be the first to say it's probably not the best Between Two Ferns.
Right.
I'll be the first to say that.
Right.
But it is very entertaining. I think everyone should check it out and be entertained for what it is worth. And I think it would have worked better had they caught him back when Zach wasn't famous. Like, if he would have been one of the, like, the president at
one
the time.
One of the originals.
Like, if it was, like, back at the
Here's
time
an
we
idea.
Started Bush.
If you want to watch the continuing saga of Barack Obama continuing to not do his job, go ahead and watch Between Two Ferns.
Yeah, because he can't have a life. He's not allowed to because he's a human being. See, that's the problem. Conservatives can't have a life.
No. I just it wouldn't matter to me if he was a conservative or not. I guess
the only ones that complain are conservatives.
It kind of bugs me when any president is trying to be a hipster.
I don't think he's trying to be a hipster.
Nobody likes hipsters.
Obama. We've become a much more socially interactive society when it comes to media, so we can't knock him for having people around him that understand
that. I can knock him. I got an idea, Mr.
He's
President.
Obsessed.
Run the damn country.
Yeah, he's obsessed with being seen as a hipster.
Yeah, he's doing that. You're not. You're not running the country.
Are you sure he's doing it? Because I don't
You're
think he's
not doing,
doing a very
it.
Good
I know
job.
That for a fact.
I just got one thing to say. Bang, bang.
So anyway, my game
on. That could be misinterpreted. Be
my
careful.
Game. My oh,
good point.
My game on this week is the Zach Galifianakis Between Two Ferns with President Barack Obama. Check it out. It's a very entertaining few minutes of your life. You'll enjoy it. DC, he's already hating on it. My game off this week is actually a really good one. I went to have breakfast with my son.
Yeah.
After dropping my daughter off at school, we go into Hardee's. I ain't got no knock on Hardee's or anything like that.
Right. Cinnamon raisin biscuits.
Here's what I got a problem with.
Now on Sundays, you're listening on a Sunday, make sure you check out their all-you-can-eat biscuits and gravy.
Whoa. They had that back in the day, though.
Time out.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah. That was 99 cents Sunday mornings, biscuits and gravy, all-you-can-eat. That's what made me fall in love with Hardee's in the first place. Now, here's the thing.
You just changed my world, bro.
I might have, but that was like, I'm talking about 1992, homie. Okay? So here's
Bobby,
the situation.
Are you going to put a Hardee's out of business?
Can I game off? Let me game off.
Game off.
Game off. Game off. Acting like you have some type of control or power over people when you're not in a position of power whatsoever. I order my food. You didn't give me the entire order. Like, they closed the box up, but they forgot to put the biscuits and the gravy in there along with the other stuff that it comes with because they got, like, the platter so I can give my son some eggs, some bacon, some this, some that. You know what I'm saying? I realized that they didn't give me my biscuits and gravy. So I bring it to the person's attention. She comes over like the ticket Nazi that she is, walks over, grabs the ticket out of my hand, and says, "Let me take a look because I think you're trying to to get one over on the top of us. I open the box up. I'm looking at the food in front of, like, there's nowhere to hide. And it's like I'm not pocketing biscuits and gravy grass on the other side.
Holy crap.
And she goes, oh, well, evidently, we didn't give you your biscuit and gravy. I'll be right back with that. She comes back over and tosses it on the table. Stop it. Ladies and gentlemen, listen. I understand that you're having a stressful day, and I understand that your life doesn't always go perfect. I get it. But when you're in a service business like fast food or something like that, you don't treat the employee, or the employees do not treat the customers like they're crooks or they're thieves unless they have legitimate reason. Like if the guy drives off, didn't pay, and he's got the bag in his hand out the window, yeah, completely flip out. I get it. I'm showing you an empty box. There's nowhere to hide this, so calm down. My game off. Acting like you have a lot of power and control when you really don't. That's what my game off is this week.
Well, and it's not like they're taking it out of her paycheck. So what is the big deal?
Fair enough. DC Chimes, what is your game on, your game off this week?
Well, my game on is that there's been a rash lately of, you know, the youth of America. That's my game on. The youth of America.
Get on the youth.
No.
Oh. Okay.
That's the problem. There's been a lot, you know, there's always, oh, the youth of America, and I'm worried about them, and they're this, and they're that. But there's been a rash lately of really amazing stories, particularly in the world of sports, that just go above and beyond. I mean, there was recently some kids at a high school. There was a water boy, team manager, whatever they call that now.
Right, what's
correct? And he had autism, and it always...
Is this the basketball one?
Yeah, and they put him in the game. That was pretty cool. But this wrestling story really got me in Minnesota. It was the state title, and, you know, that's a big deal for wrestlers.
Of course, yeah.
So they're going at this this huge match for the state title, two 16-year-olds. Well, one of the boys' father has cancer and is expected to only have 6 months to live. So he was dedicated.
So he's terminal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was dedicating the match to his father. So the boy that's dad is dying won the match. He won the state title, and the crowd is going crazy. Well, the other young man got up right off the mat, ran over to where the father was, and embraced the dad, hugged the dad.
Nice.
And it was really, you can see the video on a couple of different places online. It really is a cool thing.
It was sweet moment, yeah.
He said, you know, I'm not doing it for the attention. I didn't care about the fact that people, because it made it to USA Today and a bunch of other places, said I did it because it was from the heart, because we wanted him to know that we love and appreciate him. We know what he's going through, and we hope he gets better. And that's just cool to see some of this sportsmanship now.
Right.
Basically, game on the fact that the youth aren't always a problem.
And selfish. They're not as selfish as we make them out to be at times.
Fair enough. Now, what is your game off this week, sir?
George Zimmerman.
Okay, all right.
Time to stop covering if he
absolutely
farts. And then it's a top story, and I've seen four stories this week about what George Zimmerman had for lunch.
I have seen none. Evidently, we are looking at different sites.
I'm looking at one right now on Fox. Fox has a story right now. Zimmerman is trying to be a better person.
Fox, the network right that is conservatively based and doesn't like the fact that the George Zimmerman trial went the way it did.
Fair and balanced.
Fair and balanced.
Wait, why would Fox not like the way the Zimmerman trial went?
Well, no, they love the way that, but like they have to, like they have a side. They choose a side within it.
What's this say right here on Fox? What's today's update on George Zimmerman is?
Is parents sue Roseanne Barr over the tweets.
Okay, look.
All right, fair enough.
The trial is over. He was found not guilty. Move on. Move on from it. Let's quit rehashing every minute of it and quit going through this.
So George Zimmerman is the new O.J. Simpson.
I guess in a way, this generation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. Well, yeah.
We're going to be rehashing this for the next 10 years.
Anytime it's a black on white thing and it gets to a national level of that magnitude, it's always going to be the thing.
But the thing was, it wasn't a black on white thing. It was a black on Mexican.
But you know what I mean. Like, when it's two different ethnicities,
they
that's
just tried making it out to be black on white. And we're talking about it again.
You
here we
don't
go.
Like Trayvon Martin. I get it. It's cool, dude. There's nothing wrong with that.
Is that OJ committed a crime? There's a big difference there.
That's true. He did commit a crime, and George Zimmerman was cleared.
Right.
So that's all there is to it. We can't really argue about it. Very good, sir. Game off, George Zimmerman, and talking about him in any form or fashion. I think we actually kind of covered that a few weeks ago with the boxing match thing.
A little, yeah.
All right, Bobby, it's your turn.
Game on, Dallas Stars Rick Peverly.
Okay.
Dallas Stars Rick Peverly died on the bench Monday night in a game.
Literally died.
Died. was resuscitated, and then turned around and asked if he could go back and play.
Let's see LeBron do that.
No, no, no. The best thing is the memes that are out there now. There's a meme of LeBron being carried off, and it says, LeBron cramps, he's out for the game. Then it's Rick Peverly, as he's laying on the bench. It says, Peverly dies, resuscitated, then asks if he can still play.
All right, fair enough.
That's why hockey is better than basketball. I don't care who you are.
Fair enough, fair enough. So game on.
Game on, Rick Peverly.
Rick Peverly.
Game off. Game off, Justin Bieber.
Okay, what's wrong with
Justin? Always and forever.
What's up with Jay Biebs?
Hasn't the game been off him for several months
What's the game off on Biebs?
Okay, no? I was cool, you know, with Biebs, the music and everything like that, and trying to be the badass.
If you don't
guy.
Know, ladies and gentlemen, Bobby has an infatuation with sugary pop songs, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And boy bands.
And boy bands.
Which
and
is just, a little weird.
Justin Bieber's original hit is just way up his alley.
But Bieber's career died, like, back in August.
I don't think it died. I think it's just like... Like you literally have your years and then you move on.
He can't buy a hit right now.
So why do you want him off?
Okay, game off because I'm sitting there the other day and I'm watching, or I'm checking my Facebook feed. Somebody sends me a video of the Biebs and his deposition.
Right, it's awful.
It is hysterical when the lawyer asks him, did Selena Gomez ever come and talk to you about the fame and, you know, all this other stuff? He flips out. Don't you ask me about her.
Well, no, he's trying to be a badass tough guy, and it's comical because it's like Barney Fife trying to be a badass tough guy. So he's trying to give it to the lawyer and say, don't you ever ask me. That's what he says. Don't you ever ask me about her again.
And he flips out, and then he gets up and walks out.
I have
out.
Not seen this at all. I'm going to have to check it out.
The funniest
part. It's like being threatened by Clay Aiken. It's not scary.
The most amazing part is the lawyer says, tell me about Usher being instrumental in your career.
What is this deposition for?
It's for a lawsuit over a bodyguard pushing a fan.
Okay, I see. All right.
But he says, so tell me about that. And at first he goes, Usher, he's just a punk. Usher, that sounds familiar. Really? You don't know who Usher is? Yeah. He's the guy that
gave you your job.
The
guy that gave you your life?
And then he says, the lawyer says, Justin, wasn't Usher instrumental in your career? And he's trying to be cool, and he stops and he goes, well, I was found on YouTube, and I believe I was detrimental to my career.
What?
Yes, two words have never been spoken.
You were detrimental to your career. Yes. As of this moment, you've been even more detrimental than you've ever been before.
What?
Congratulations. Awesome. Well,
can we
fair
send
enough.
Him back to Canada yet? Did that position reach enough signatures yet?
100,000, yep.
Game off, Justin Bieber. Matt Krueger, you are the guest today, sir. What is your game on?
My game on, honestly, and I've really was surprised by this whole thing game on, so I had to come up with something real fast.
But okay,
something that I think is really cool right now is, quite honestly, the WWE Network.
You're just on. That's what Bobby's was.
I love it.
Bobby did a game on that.
The WWE Network is like the coolest.
Do you have it? You have it, obviously.
I do. And it's,
let me second this, because the greatest part is going back and watching 1983 Starrcade with Dusty Rhodes.
You could all of that. See, this is the problem that I have. I'm not knocking your game on. I think that that's fine. My problem that I have with this whole situation is that you could have done all of this for many, many years. The DVDs and Blu-rays have existed for a long time.
But do you know how much money you would have had to have spent?
Sure, I understand that. But
do you know how much time it would take to research
and download?
And collect?
Yeah.
And download? Yeah. Just like a lot, but for $9.99 a month, you have access to,
or free on BitTorrent.
Have access streaming anytime you want. You don't have to wait for it to download. You don't have to wait for seeds and peers to all connect.
Fair enough.
You just go, you click, and you can watch 400 on demand different pay per views from NWA, WCW, ECW, WWE, all the Raws, all the Nitros, all the original programming.
True.
For plus you get. Even if all they offered was just the pay-per-view and they had nothing else.
Yeah, the pay-per-views are worth it. I'll be the first to admit that.
Then it's worth $10.
I mean,
bucks.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't understand this, WWE is giving you, for $10 a month, every pay-per-view that they used to be charging you $60 a month for, they're giving it to you for $10 a month.
Which is the price
WrestleMania
of three.
And all of them. That's impressive.
And WrestleMania is more expensive. WrestleMania is $70 in HD for a four-hour program. Now, what is it? $10.
There it is.
WWE and UFC are the most homoerotic programs.
We all know it, and we all don't care.
that is it.
Look,
really,
there is nothing homoerotic about two men in small pants rolling around, touching each other, oiled and greased up.
Stop
it is.
Right there. Game off this week. What's your game off?
I honestly don't have a gay a game off.
A gay off?
Yeah, see? I don't have one of those either.
See what happened?
By the way, I want to add a honorary mentionable game on this week.
Yeah.
Lou Ferrante and Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel.
Absolutely.
That was an amazing interview that he just did. And ladies and gentlemen, you need to check out Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel. I was blown away by it. I guarantee you'll be blown away by
check
it.
Check out
too.
Your local listings for the days and times that it airs.
Definitely. Okay, we're going to have overtime at the end of the show only for the people who download the episode live on the internet. So you don't get it if you're listening to the syndicated feed, but at the same point, you can wait. When it goes up, you'll get some extra love, you know, where we get a little racy and stuff like that. Real quick, I talked about the game on being between two firms with Zach Galifianakis.
Correct.
Okay. Bill O'Reilly would like to chime in and say, Abraham Lincoln would never have appeared on a Funny or Die skit in his entire life. That's what our friend Bill O'Reilly would like to let you guys all know. Well, let me finish off today's show with a little bit about Bill O'Reilly, okay? Bill O'Reilly started off kind of like Phil Donahue, just doing kind of sensational Inside Edition television shows, okay? Which is just crap TV for no reason whatsoever. Also, if you didn't know this about Bill O'Reilly, ladies and gentlemen, and this could be difficult for a lot of the people here in this little room to understand, Bill O'Reilly was born in the 20th century, and Abraham Lincoln was not. He was already dead by the 20th century.
So what you're saying is that they weren't friends.
They weren't friends, and they don't know each other at all. So for a guy like Bill O'Reilly, who is obviously just fishing for compliments on this situation, he has no idea what Abraham Lincoln would have done.
How is he fishing for compliments? Because he doesn't think...
Oh, because he wants his conservative base to just sucker in and go, you're right! You're so right! That Obama guy is a horrible human being!
Well, just because he has an opinion that Obama shouldn't be doing things like this doesn't mean he's, you know...
Yeah, but when you have to add an Abraham Lincoln, someone of that magnitude, at that level... For no reason. Well, like, that didn't even need to be said. Like, you didn't even have to bring that up, honestly. No one believes you would even know.
Who would he bring up?
But you don't have to bring up anyone because you just don't know those people.
Well, no, you know, but you could bring up another. Ronald Reagan probably
James
wouldn't have
Madison
done that.
Would have loved listening to the Q.
He was an actor.
Hey, James right? Madison.
He might.
James Madison would
while
love,
he was president, though.
Would have loved listening to the Q.
He had better things to do.
James
like
Madison
run
would
the
have
country.
Loved listening to the Q. I know for a fact James Madison loved listening to the Q.
Bang, bang.
Yep, that's it.
Well, but I don't think you have to know them to make some statements about the kind of president they were. I mean,
but I think Abraham Lincoln would have been a team player.
Abraham
I don't think
Lincoln
he had a problem.
Grew a beard based off of a letter written from a little girl. That's like if Barack Obama got a tweet saying, you know what? I think you should just grow a porn star mustache. And he was like, you know what? Oh, okay.
Sweet. Obama with a porn star mustache.
All right, last thing before we get out of here.
That is how you close the
show. Last thing before we get out of here. It's hardly news that prepubescent boys have no idea how to properly administer Axe body spray. It is news when said inappropriate Axe use causes a school-wide shutdown. That's right. 8 students were hospitalized and 2 others were taken into their own doctors after someone released the especially pungent body spray in a 6th grade classroom.
Sweet.
At 1 p.m. In the town in Brooklyn, New York. Emergency crews rushed to Medgar Evers College Preparatory School in Brooklyn to investigate the hazardous smell. This isn't the first time that Axe body spray has terrorized educational facilities. A Pennsylvania high school had to ban the spray in March after a student was hospitalized after exposure to its fumes. Oh. A year earlier, Connecticut high school officials said the fire alarms went off after a student's overabundance of Axe spraying in a locker room set them off. So if you insist on smelling like a middle school cafeteria, maybe stick to Axe shower gel from now on, ladies
so
and gentlemen.
When is the federal mandate and regulation on Axe body spray coming down the pipeline?
I have absolutely no idea, but I will tell you this, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm waiting for it.
It is time for us to get out of here on the queue, and we are going to have overtime right after this, but I want to first off thank 1420 WINI and 1280 AM KYRO, respectively, for playing the show every single week. Lou Ferrante, watch Inside the Gangster's Code on Discovery Channel every week. Check your schedules for times.
Also, I want to thank Matt Kruger for joining us today,
thank
as
you
well
so much
as
for
BC Chimes.
Me. Yo.
I appreciate that, sir. And we are giving away Justin Moore tickets for the show at the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis on March 27th. If you want your chance to win a pair, get over to the contest section of theq.com and sign up. You only need to sign up once. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on The Q this week. Thank you so much for listening to the show, and we will see you guys next time on The Q.
Every day I drive to work across Flint River Bridge.
We do it for fun, yeah, yeah. We just do it for fun.
Bad boy,
yeah, we do it for fun.
Big Bobby, producer Bobby, Marky, Nelly, Diddy. Mercy Lee, House, and the band played on. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Overtime.
Come here, girl.
What your name is, where you been, where around, where you came with. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Damn it, I love this.
Welcome to Overtime. Mark Bland, producer Bobby, DC, and Matt both had to take off. Of course, Polar Vortex Dan Walsh is chilling in Botswana right now. On the Polar Vortex tour, which we sent him on, which was beautiful. I mean, things
worked
just,
perfectly.
It's working beautiful for him and everybody else out there. You know, we're going to do a short overtime this week. You know, nothing major for you guys to really worry about.
Well, while you're looking through the papers, I have the funniest 911 call ever.
You did the 911 call. Okay.
No. Okay. So, 911 call. Guy calls and says that his cat has trapped him and
his
family.
You got it ready?
Yeah.
Let's do this. I got to hear it.
Yeah, hi. I have a kind of a particular emergency here. My cat attacked our 7-month-old child, and I kicked the button, the cat in the rear, and it has went off over the edge, and we aren't safe around the cat. It's a very large Himalayan, and we're trapped in our bedroom. He won't let us out of our door.
Okay. Does the child need medical attention?
No, he's just got scratches on his forehead. But the cat, we don't attack us. He's very, 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 very hostile.
So
I tried to get a hold of animal control.
Hang on just a second. You guys are inside your bedroom right now.
Yeah. And when I leave out the bedroom to let the police in, I'm going to have to fight this cat.
Hang on just a second. And when you say the cat is large, how large?
22 pounds, maybe.
Okay, now, first off, let's break this down for a second before we finish this off, okay? We have a family that's trapped behind their bedroom door.
Right.
By a cat that's 22 pounds big, a big Himalayan, okay?
Yeah.
It's already attacked the child, and now they're trying to get... Now, they're calling the police. I understand why their purpose is to call the police and stuff like that, but, like, you need animal control ASAP, okay?
Right.
Or, like, release a snake into the house to take on the cat.
Something.
Dude, cats can be vicious.
They can.
My buddy Rob has two cats, and the one cat, ever since the day he got it, like, the one cat's cool, but the other cat, ever since that, will literally, even now that it's been declawed, but literally for the first year he didn't have it declawed, this thing tore Matt's hand up,
no.
It tore my hand up, it tore people's hands up. Like, just mean, vicious.
Well, the best part is, is the next part, when the guy tells the 911 operator...
Go ahead and just play.
All right, sir. I can send the police out there. Do you think the cat is ill?
I don't know. I think that the cat is—he's got kind of a history of violence. He's kind of a violent cat
he's
already.
Out of violence.
But
history
he's really
of violence.
Right now. He's charging us. He's at our door, bedroom door.
One moment, okay.
Wow.
I have a guy who is at the yard. He's in his apartment. His 22-pound Himalayan cat
mm-hmm.
attacked a 7-month-old. He kicked the cat, and the cat lost it. The cat is now trying to attack all of them,
mm-hmm.
and they are penned in a bedroom and can't get out as the cat tries to come at them every time they open the door.
Okay.
Am I setting that up for
yeah.
police response?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just making sure.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
I'm just making sure
that we can even save these people, because, God forbid, the 22-pound maniac attack cat.
Dude, that is the funniest damn thing in the world.
That is just too much, man. I'm sorry. Like, look, just stop it with the pets. And game off having pets. I'm sorry. I know that we have, like, Justin who comes on the show. He loves dogs.
Right.
We have other people that just love their animals and stuff. And I get it. Stop it. Just, like, no more bugs in the house. You don't have to worry about fleas. You don't have to worry about cleaning them or grooming them. You don't have to feed them and spend money on that. I understand you love your animals. Stop it. Just stop. Maybe I'm just one of those people. I get it. I understand. That's pretty good, Bobby.
Dude, that's one of the best things I've ever heard.
All right. I got some advice here. Actually, a question directly for us. Are you ready?
Yep.
It's time for we're going to have Dr. Bobby this day.
Okay.
Dr. Bobby, I have heard you and Bobby talk about being dads on the show many times, so I have a question and a dilemma for you both.
Okay.
My 3-year-old son discovered his testicles. When I asked him what they were, he replied, "They're my balls. They make my weekie happy." Now he won't quit running around singing it. How can I stop him? It's embarrassing at the store and in front of neighbors. So it makes my wiki happy.
Well, the hardest thing is for me to answer that because I don't have my son yet.
Yes, I have a son, but he's like just like if I ask him about his pee-pee, he knows where it's at. He goes, "That's my pee-pee." Like, you know, yeah. And he points. But that's about it. Like, he doesn't have names for it. He's not running around jiggling or anything like that. So,
I mean, what we do because, I mean, with my daughters, they have... You know, when we change them and stuff like that, they have a tendency to reach down and, you know, explore.
Right, of course.
And we always tell them, you know, for now, that's the yucky parts.
Right.
You don't want to touch
nobody
that.
But mommy or daddy can be down there.
Correct. Right. So they've learned now not to you know.
That's, your no-no spot.
Yeah.
It's the no-no spot.
They understand it. So, I mean, I don't know. Hell, it's a lot harder with the boy.
I don't know if I have an answer for this one just because my son's just turned two and like he's on his way to like this age right here. You know, he's 3 years old, this kid.
Right.
So like I'll probably be going down this road here within the next year or so.
Yeah.
I just haven't got an answer for you, man. It's just one of those things where you just got to probably just keep reinforcing and telling him you can't talk like that. You can't say those things. Don't say that.
As long as your son doesn't grow up to be a moron. Like the person that I've heard where he loses a bet and gets his name changed to Full Metal Havoc Frost Nova, more sexy than Spock and all the superheroes.
Oh, that's so stupid. Why do people do these things, Bobby? Did you see the picture of the guy who decided to put the bars? Like, he's got it through his eyebrow and then through the lower part of his under his eye. Like,
no.
And they're full metal bars. And he's got three covering each eye on both sides. Basically, he's just looking through jail cell bars on a consistent basis all day long every day.
Wow.
That's literally what... And I'm, like, sitting there going, "Hey, man, I get it. You're unique. You're trying to, like, you know, find yourself." That looks, one, painful. Looks like
super
it took a while.
Painful.
Super painful. And two... That's just ridiculous. Unless you work at a tattoo or a place that does that for a living, you're not going to get a job anywhere because you can't just remove bars like that. Like,
no.
Those holes close and then you're screwed. So why do something as dumb as that? Stop being a fucking moron, man. That's I'm sorry. Excuse my language, but seriously, that's just dumb stuff right there. All right. Let's see here. I got a couple of different... Okay. My brother and I were really close growing up, and he's sort of my best friend, Bobby.
Okay.
Anyway, there was this guy that requested to be my friend on Facebook and saw that he is a mutual friend of my bro. I just ignored the request thinking it was a mistake. After a few months, I decided to check all my pending requests and decided to check the guy's profile. That's when I found out that he and my brother have a relationship. It was pretty shocking because my bro is clearly not the type. He plays basketball, is very rugged to be a gay guy, but now I have come to accept it. They are, I think, 5 years into their relationship, and I've only known about it for 2 years. I am the only one who knows and feels like I have to tell my bro that I support him no matter what. Do I just tell him that I know? How should I go about that?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure. Why not? You know, you explain that, you know, explain the story you just explained to us. Like,
yeah.
That's like, hey, this guy hit me up on Facebook. He said he wanted to be my friend. I went through his page and checked it out, and evidently, you know, and I hope you understand, like... I realize that you and him have a relationship. And
we don't have a problem with that at all.
I don't.
I don't have a problem with that at all. I just want to let you know I absolutely support you in all your future endeavors and you know, whatever, you know, you choose to do. And I want you to know that I know and, You don't have to be afraid to talk to me about it or anything like that.
That's simple. That's the way I would look at that situation.
Absolutely.
All right, Bobby, let's finish this up with a quick set of questions.
Nice.
Mark, do you think anybody else uses Google as an extension of their brain like I do?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
I think totally, yeah. I think that the Google
is the end-all to all arguments and everything. When I am at work and someone disagrees with me, the first thing I say is, Google it.
Let's Google it. Let's go to Wikipedia. Let's just go to the internet. Yeah, I think that Google has just kind of become the default memory for a lot of people. Like, yeah, we can't possibly know everything. And we are so inundated with media, whether it's audio like the podcast or the radio show here at the Q, or whether it's a TV show or what. Like, you're just inundated. YouTube, you're just inundated all day long with media. It's hard to remember everything. So I think people have now become very selective with what they care about to remember or not.
We got into an argument at my store about, what year did Christopher Columbus, you know, come to America? Was it 1492 or 1592? And the exact answer that all of us came to was Google it.
Ah, there it is. Is it hypocritical to use pot tax revenue for drug use prevention?
No, absolutely. I don't think so because, I apologize. What I'm thinking of is in the state of Colorado.
Well, that's
in
what they're
one
talking.
Month. $2 million worth of revenue.
But a majority of that revenue now has to go and be used, and I think that's where the question comes from, has to go and be used for educating people about the bad things that have to do with marijuana use. And so there's kind of like this, you made money from pot to turn around and downplay pot.
Correct, yeah. I don't think you could do that.
I think it is hypocritical to an extent. Either you're either on one side of the fence or you're not.
Right.
There's no both sides. Like, yes, there are side effects to pot use. Let's not be stupid about it. But I don't think that you should be like wasting tons of this revenue money. Like, I don't understand. Like, if it's just you guys trying to make yourselves feel good about the decisions you made as lawmakers,
right.
Then maybe you shouldn't be making those decisions.
We're going to legalize cocaine, and then we're going to turn around and tell you why you shouldn't do cocaine.
Last question. Did the Tea Party back any Republican or fight against them? This is a really unique question.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that it's unique, Bobby, is very simple. The Tea Party has kind of become their own worst enemy. You have a lot of extreme individuals, not all of them, but you have a lot of extreme individuals with very, very strong opinions in a negative fashion towards a specific style of government in the United States of America.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that whatsoever if you have those beliefs. Yet they've become extremely vocal and have attached a very popular name in the Tea Party to those extreme views. Therefore, whenever somebody hears the word Tea Party, of course, they're going, that's right. All there is to it. That's the reason why Barack Obama walks right back in 2012 and wins re-election without any problems whatsoever, aside from Mitt Romney sticking his foot in his mouth and saying stupid things about the 47%. What you had was a lot of people infighting during the primaries, your Ron Pauls versus the this persons and that, and it was the two sides infighting and not really coming to an agreement on back individual.
Right.
Yes, Mitt Romney becomes the de facto Republican nominee, but at the end of the day, you had a lot of Tea Party people that just were like, that's not our guy, so we're not going to support. We're just not going to vote, or we're just going to vote for somebody else. And it's like, you split the vote, you screwed yourselves. So now you're stuck with Barack Obama, even if you hated it.
Right.
Even though I like Barack Obama, other people like Barack Obama, you're on the other side of that fence. If you don't like something, you should at least voice your opinion against that thing. And unfortunately, you voiced it against your own party to an extent. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, when you get to Capitol Hill, it's a yes or no vote. There is no third or fourth option or fifth option. You know what I'm saying? It's literally, oh, I'm Tea Party. I don't represent the Republicans. I don't represent the Democrats. I'm Tea Party. Okay, well, it's time for the yes or no vote. Are you for this or against it? Well, okay, I just don't have to vote. Well, if you don't vote, then you didn't have a say.
Right.
Well, I didn't get here to not have a say, so now I have to, like, in my mind as a Tea Party person, choose the lesser of two evils. So I have to naturally side with whatever the conservative thought is on this yes or no vote.
Right.
That's all there is to it. You literally feel like in this country that you have a lot of options. On Capitol Hill, when it comes down to real laws and decisions being made in this country, yes, some of those options can stop things up front from getting turned into bills that need to be voted on. But in most cases, when it comes time to vote, there literally is only two options. So you're just stepping on your own toes, literally,
right?
If you're just going to be like that. So, yeah, I think that at this point, maybe the Republicans need to back off the Tea Party. Like, don't support them. Or vice versa, the Tea Party should just not be a part of that. And by default, like, have everyone in the Republican Party and the GOP on the same page that says, this is who we are going to back. If you guys want to play along and vote in November on this president or this senator or whatever, then you need to choose whichever person you feel you need to go with.
Right.
But, like, if you're just going to step on our toes just to, like, prove a point, you're hurting your entire career. You're just hurting everything.
Right.
It makes no sense.
Absolutely.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for us here on Overtime. I first off want to thank Bobby.
Absolutely. Make sure you guys go to theqnow.com. Click on the contest page. Enter to win your chance at a pair of tickets to see Justin Moore on March 27th at 7 p.m. live at the Chaffetz Arena with Randy Houser and Josh Thompson.
I think that's going to be a really good show. I'm looking forward to maybe
I'm excited
being able to go myself.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us. We will see you guys next time on The Q.
She says I'm cold. Only time I'm kissing is sending X and O's. I send a message back to, but this I know. I hope to find my love like we do.